When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi everyone, and welcome to this week's podcast. Now, my guest today is Emma Kirk Odunubi, who is a running coach, personal trainer, and sports scientist who specializes in biomechanics and finding the perfect footwear for the individual runner. Emma leans on her experience of assessing gait movement patterns to really go beyond just coaching runners how to run, but instead to make everyone from beginners to pros have a long and sustainable running journey. And with the London Marathon just around the corner and running now being one of the fastest growing trends in the fitness industry right now, it felt like the best time to speak to an expert on how we can all approach running in the best and healthiest way possible. So Emma, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a total pleasure. And I guess I want to start by saying that I followed you on Instagram for a long time. And I feel like one of the things that I really love online is when I find someone who has a really good niche, especially within the fitness space. And I remember kind of reading some of your content around footwear, gait analysis, and kind of even sort of the biomechanics stuff. It's an area that I don't know much about. And I remember being totally fascinated by it. So I think it's really great that I've got you on the podcast basically to pick your brains about all the things that I don't know. So before we go there, I guess one of the things that is always helpful to understand is kind of the context of your journey to where you find yourself now. So if you could tell me, how did you get into running and even just into your kind of own fitness experience?
Yeah, definitely. So I was always an active child. From the age of like four, that was my passion, movement. And I think my mom wanted me to sit down quite a lot. So she just threw me into all the different sports clubs and things like that, just to try and keep me, you know, as calm as possible when she needed me to be. And then from there, kind of fast forward into university life. I went to university at Brunel, studied sports science. Further on, studied all things fitness, and the science of running and everything else that came with that. Sadly, in my first year of university, my dad died when I was 19. So I started uni in September, and he had a very short illness with a brain tumor and died in February. So that was really difficult for me, really difficult time, because I was away from home and kind of trying to process all these new emotions of being in the university space, but also, you know, I'd lost my dad, so a major figure in my life. And at university, I always call it like I was almost on like holiday. Didn't feel real, didn't feel those like real emotions of loss, because I was away anyway. So upon finishing uni, you know, I'm 22, 23, I decided to stay in London, and I lived on my own initially. And that's when grief hit me kind of head on. No warning, just fully took me out. I wasn't surrounded by friends as much. So I was really inside my head and really aware of what had happened. So running saved me is basically the best way to put it. It was the easy thing to do. I could put my shoes on, I could go outside, and it simply made me eat. It made me shower, because I was living in my room having bowl of cereal for breakfast, lunch and dinner, which I look back on now and it is crazy to think that I was stuck in such that kind of hole and rut. And, you know, I'd go to work and I'd be smiles and everything. And then I'd come back and I just segregate myself into that hole again. So running genuinely helped me to not only process my grief, but kind of find myself again out of that really, really dark space.
I'm so sorry for your loss. And yeah, I can't imagine how difficult that must have been. And I think that there are so many people who come to exercise through a grief journey, you know, who find that kind of solace and that escapism that whether it be running or any other form of movement can actually provide them with. And we know that exercise is so, you know, correlated to us feeling better mentally, giving us that kind of boost of happiness. But I think particularly on a grief journey, there is something to be said about just having that routine and that kind of dependability, basically, of something that you know is just going to keep you going. And like you said, do those most basic things like eating and showering. So I think many people will relate to that. And then I guess for me, it's also really interesting in terms of how you transition that into being something that has saved you to then being something that you become really passionate about and start to, I guess, kind of also use that as the space within which you work. So what was that transition like from doing it as a coping mechanism to then doing it as a, well, this is now my career?
Yeah, so kind of as an almost like side journey to that sort of running point, when I was 13, I was very heavily involved in athletics, and there was a gentleman called Sam Lamborn, and he owned this place called The Jog Shop in Brighton. And now The Jog Shop is one of the very first independent running shops that existed in the UK. And I was 13. I wanted a bit of money for myself. So he saw me around the track. He's like, "Oi, Emma, you want a Saturday job?" I was like, "Sure." So I went to his shop, and he basically taught me the trade, taught me how to look at feet, how to go through very simple kind of eyes only gait analysis and look and see how people are moving differently, and then align different foot shapes and foot movement to different brands of shoes. And that's kind of how I learned my craft. So even while I was at university, I worked for the likes of Nike, Runner's World, as like part-time jobs alongside my work. And then upon leaving uni, I went and worked for a company called Profeet. So that was where we did very in-depth sort of gait analysis. We're talking, you know, looking at foot pressure scans, looking at markerless systems to see about body movement and things like that. And we also created insoles as well. So that journey kind of, it's like where passion meets work, you know, like I'd found that passion for running, but then at the same time, it was where like a lot of my knowledge base was. So I was able to kind of combine the two. Yeah, when I look back and think about it, I was like, it happened by chance, but actually it was meant to be.
I love that. And I think we are going to come on to talk about the kind of the role of technology and also the role of just like shoes and kind of all that sort of stuff in a bit. But I guess coming back to the running to start with, I think that for a lot of people, like one of the things that I'm recognizing right now is that running is so huge, and it's just feeling like it's having a bit of a moment. I see so many more people now, more than ever actually, taking up running, applying to races, really, you know, using the community of running as a way to kind of grow, not just a way of exercising, but really a lifestyle and a way of being. And so I think for those that are listening to this podcast, it would be really interesting to hear from you, your advice on, you know, how you coach people to have, hopefully healthy and injury-free running journey, whether that's someone that's at the start of that journey or kind of on the process of getting to a point where they feel comfortable, you know, running. What are some of the things that you think people should be incorporating into that kind of routine?
So one of the biggest things and the thing that helped me further on in my own running journey, and actually a lot of clients that I work with all attend some sort of run club. So the community, as you mentioned, like the run community is something so special in terms of every other barrier that's going on in day-to-day life, be it financial, be it where you live, all these things. When you turn up to run, you've got a pair of trainers and you're a runner, you know? So people don't make judgments or prerequisites on who you are and what you are. You're just a runner who enjoys running. And that community that you can find is just people with that like-minded sense. So I think for anyone who, even if they're beginning, seeing if you can find communities in your area where it's for beginners, or if you have been running for a while but you kind of lost your mojo, looking at, okay, well, can I go to one that's in the city? Is there one near my local park run where they've got their own run club and things like that? So seeking run clubs in your local area, definitely. If you are starting from scratch, I think the best one, and I'll be very honest, is kind of, you know, your Couch to 5K, 100%, a free app to download and utilize. Otherwise, I always talk about it and I profess it, and I've done it with so many people. It's the classic 1 minute run, 1 minute walk. Now that run doesn't have to be, you know, sprinting for the bus run. That run can be a real light jog, even something that's a little bit more than a power walk. It doesn't have to be huge, but just you getting moving and that heart rate starts to raise a little more, and then walk for a minute. You could do that maybe 3 or 4 times. So you're only doing a total of 3 or 4 minutes of running as your first point. And then week and week, just build up that extra minute of running. When you get to 10 minutes worth, then double it. Go to 2 minutes of running, 1 minute of walking, but bring it back down. So you're doing maybe 5 sets. So you're still totaling only 10 minutes. And then just following that as like a really simple progression. It doesn't have to be every day. It can be once a week. Could be twice a week if you want to. But just, I think, to find that love as such is to build it slowly. So you're not putting pressure. Your friend's not telling you, cool, we've got to enter a 5K race next week. Like, you're being super kind to yourself and going, do you know what? It's a journey that I want to do for me. And I'm going to take my time. And that's the biggest thing as a coach I say to people when they're running. They're like, oh, but I've got this race. And I'm like, are we sure? Is it in the right timeline? Are you rushing it? Is it going to be a stressful experience? So they're like the two, I'd say, community and then building yourself slowly, definitely.
I think that's really good advice. And I think it's really nice hearing from a running coach that you don't need to start off by just trialing your 5K time. Because I think so many of us have these like warped and kind of obscure metrics that we have in our mind of like what we think we need to do as a runner. And I know that I've fallen guilty of this so many times where I decide that I'm going to go for a run. And I'm like, right, well, I need to do 5K then. And it just feels like we put all this pressure on ourselves to hit certain targets when actually you're so right. It can be super simple. And I often think like the saying, like, don't walk before you can run is actually true. Like, in terms of progression, I wouldn't put someone in the gym and give them 100 kg deadlift to do, you know, like I would give them a kettlebell deadlift or even not, like just with a bar. And I do think that we forget that as with any other form of exercise, you have to build yourself up to those longer runs or those, you know, kind of more long distance runs, exactly the same as we do in any other sport.
Yeah, totally agree. And I think, you know, I'll be honest, a lot of people that come to work with me sometimes, they've been, you know, running 5 days a week. And they're like, Emma, I'm not seeing progress. I'm not getting faster. I'm not doing all this. And I'm like, are you running all the time at the same speed? Are you slowing down when you're running? Are you maybe doing a little bit faster for some of these runs? So as you said, like there's regressions and progressions that will help you overall get better. And yeah, it can be, you know, there's so many positives of running in social media. Don't get me wrong, but a big kind of, I'd say a minor negative is that we compare so much. And I find myself doing it sometimes as well. You're like, well, that's where that person is. So I should be able to do that. And that's where that person is. And well, oh, does that mean I'm not good because I'm not hitting said target and said goal? And I think just taking a step back and being like, no one else is you. So when you're trying to compare to those other people doing that, well, they haven't had your fitness journey, your running journey. They don't have your work schedule, your life. So it's trying to get that remembrance of, no, you're the only person really you can compare yourself against because no one's doing what you're doing.
It's something that we're all guilty of, but yeah, I still find myself doing it. I'm really glad that you said that you did too, because I'm like, it's so hard. Now, look, I want to dig into something that you just mentioned there, which is about kind of doing different styles of running. You know, I think a lot of people, when they set out on their running journey, they just think, let me run as far as I can and see how I get on. Whereas what we actually know is that, you know, like you said, doing maybe some faster runs, some maybe more tempo runs, some runs that are your longer runs, some runs that are your recovery runs can actually be more beneficial to building yourself to being a stronger overall runner. So talk to me about those different aspects and how you tend to incorporate those with the people that you work with.
So the best way for me to explain this, I'm very much an analogy person, is I say, try and think of a pyramid. So you've got the base of the pyramid, and that is, the bigger your base, the more stable and the more likely you're going to be able to progress through the levels, right? So if your base is really small, it's going to be a bit more unstable for you to try and build upon. So when we talk about bases in running, I always talk of it about from a heart rate perspective. Now, this for some people might just kind of go out their minds, but instead of heart rate, let's use rate of perceived exertion, so RPE. So for most of my runners, I will get 80% of their runs to register about a 4 or 5 on that RPE scale. So easy, conversational, could chat to a friend if they were next to them. I do as well. I call my mum whilst I'm on the run. Hey mum, on a run, might be a bit breathless, but I need to keep this really easy. So I'm going to talk to you. I turn off the watch. I don't pay attention to time. I just want that cruisy comfy. By having that big base of that, what it means is when we then add in these higher intensities, so these faster runs that feel very uncomfortable, that might be short intervals, you know, 2 minute hard run, 1 minute walk, those style. What it basically will allow us to do, the bigger your base is of that kind of easy pace, the easier your body's going to break down that nasty lactic that builds up when you run super fast. So for you to get faster, the bigger the base, combined with the faster paces you hold up at the top, that's then how your body's going to be able over time to hold this top end pace for longer. So then we overall not only build the bottom part of the pyramid, we build the top part in terms of our ability to sustain a more uncomfortable pace. So that is usually the way that I do it. I'll give 80% of the bottom part of the pyramid, 20%, kind of 15%, let's say, of the top part, and then I'll give maybe 5% of that sort of middle ground, which what I find a lot of runners actually come to me, they do a lot of the middle ground. They don't do much of the easy, and they don't do too much of the top end. Wow, that's going to hurt pace. So that's the biggest sort of education piece I try and get every runner to understand. Build the bottom base to make the top base basically easier as such.
So interesting. And I love that analogy. It's always good when you can like visualize what someone means with something. And I think that, you know, I would describe it as like zone two stuff, but my only experience of training for a race was when I did my half marathon all those years ago. Never again for me anyway.
Maybe. But you never know.
Never say never, Emma. Never say never. But I do remember that what I didn't realize at the time was that a lot of my training runs were with a friend. In fact, 90% of my training runs were with a friend. And at the time, I didn't recognize that that meant that we were chatting the whole time. And so when it then came to my race and I was running on my own and I wasn't chatting away, I was like, "Ooh, I can really push it here." And I ended up like having a really great race because I trained that kind of that capacity to be able to be at talking pace the whole time and get really comfortable in that space. And I think it's a really good point that often on runs, we have this ego that we're dealing with. It's like, you can go a bit faster, or you can go a bit faster, especially if you're running on your own. And just having that advice from you to really just pull it back to chill out a little bit, which is actually going to make us stronger in the long term, is really helpful.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, we hold my hands up and say I'm a very competitive person with myself and in my training. So if, for example, I am very motivated by a pace, I'll try and transition that. And as you said, so those easy runs, I want to be in zone two, maximum bottom end of zone three. So I will then challenge myself to look at my watch and be like, am I in that zone? And if I'm not, I'll pull back. So then I'll set myself that target. Another really good one that you can do is actually just set yourself a time goal for the run, rather than setting a distance, because sometimes when we get fixated on distance, we speed up to get there quicker. So if you just set time is always going to move in the same length anyway. So maybe using that, you know, if you're doing a route where you go 20 minutes out, turn around after 20 and come 20 minutes back. So yeah, I'd say a good way to help that too is just base it off time rather than a set distance.
We'll be back after this. Welcome back to Give Me Strength. I think that's really helpful for a lot of people, because I think when we set distances, and because technology's caught up so much, like we have this fitness tech that kind of is, as we're running, giving us all of this feedback, and actually for some people, probably less helping, more hindering them in terms of getting stronger overall in their running. So I really think it's interesting to hear that you sometimes give the advice, not always, I'm sure, but sometimes give the advice of just going for time. And do you think for people that struggle with that, constantly checking their fitness wearable, do you think it's helpful actually to sometimes remove that and just say, like, check in with how you're feeling and just go for time?
Absolutely. So I'll give a prime example. This weekend I ran a half marathon. And at the start of it, I was like, right, I'm going to run this at marathon pace. Had like my watch all set. I was like, we're going to do this as like a prerequisite for this. And then we're going to get to halfway and we're going to take it to this time. I literally crossed the start line and just went, I'm going to run this on feel. I don't want to look at my watch. So I literally, you know, maybe it buzzed once in a while and I kind of take a quick look. But actually, ended up running the race way faster than I anticipated because I listened to what my body was telling me. And yeah, as you said, we get so fixated on a device being there to kind of tell us what's happening, when actually we then tune out of our own bodies, which is the complete opposite of what we want to do when we go into a running space. So yeah, I totally agree with that. Sometimes just if you want to have it tracked, just turning it on and putting it in your pocket, you know, so it's there, but you don't have to look at it and be constantly kind of giving a bit of anxiety whilst you're running. No one needs that or wants that.
No, definitely not. I think that one of the things I find really interesting about you is that you straddle kind of the personal training and the strength training space, as well as the running space. And we know that both of those separate entities really complement each other. And I've seen a lot more chat in this kind of space of how strength training really benefits runners. So talk to me a little bit about your advice when it comes to strength training to support a running journey?
If I'm very honest, I think it's probably the first thing you should do before you start running. If you could do it that way around, I would say having a basis of glute strength, leg strength, most specifically and importantly, I'll be very honest, is calf strength. Because when we run, dependent on where you strike the ground, you're putting anywhere between 3 to 5 times your body weight through your leg with each stride. So if you imagine you're doing that and you haven't got the strength there in the muscles, of course, there's a point where things may unfortunately break down. It's going to be in those lower limbs. And a lot of people I see, that is the first point of call. I mean, classic injury shin splints is usually because of weaknesses of the calves or the tibant, which is that muscle on the front of the shin. So for me, making sure that any runner I work with has calf raises and calf holds ticked off as a prerequisite to doing any other sort of strength work is like the vital thing. So they might be after a run, they might be before a run, they might be on a completely separate day, but I will make sure they're in there. The other one for me, some variation of a squat and lunge. So whether that is back squat, goblet squat, whatever variation you need in there, and building that strength. So we're working more those endurance repetitions. So, you know, 8 to 12+ reps to help build that endurance. Because as I say, when we take a 5K, for example, minimum, that's 5,000 steps, depending on length, etc. But you're doing that very repetitively. And if your body can't endure the amount of volume alongside the weight that you're putting through, it's going to be giving you that wrong impression of running before you've actually managed to get those benefits. So for me, that's why they're just so closely linked. And to this day, I have never written anyone a plan without strength work, and I will never.
And I think that we're really starting to recognize that. I remember ages ago, I won't name the coach, but a coach said to me that if you practice this, you'll stand yourself in good stead. But it was like, you don't run to get fit. You need to be fit to run. And I know that in a way, I have issues with that statement, because I think if anyone's going to take up running, like, go for it. Like, it doesn't mean Absolutely. That you have to start strength training. But I do think that it helps us to recognize the importance of having a stable and strong structure that we then put that force through. And I think when you use that analogy of kind of whether it be 5,000 steps or whether it be all of that kind of body weight going through a single leg on a heel strike, I think that it gives us that ability to recognize maybe why strength training does really matter when it comes to running, and particularly someone that's running, I guess, a decent amount of volume each week. If you're just doing a casual Sunday run, you know, yes, it's important, but maybe it's not your thing, fine. But I think if you're doing upwards of, I don't know, you tell me, but sort of 1-2 runs a week that are, you're really starting to push it, having a strong lower body is one of the most vital things to, I guess, keep that journey as a positive and injury-free one.
Yeah, completely. And I think that's the bit that I always go home to, is that injury-free part. So, you know, one part of my story when I was getting into running, and as I say, I was using it as a mechanism, was I was running loads. I was doing all the things all the time. And I'll be very honest, I was definitely overtraining. Because I was just I got into that zone where I was like, nope, I just need to keep running because that makes me feel good. And that got me into an injury state. So, you know, I've experienced shin splints. I've experienced pain in my hip. I've experienced tears in places just because I wasn't focusing on, hang on, we don't need to hit that run every single day. We need to step away and go, let me strengthen that so that I can get better at something else. So definitely it can be a learning curve. It could be a harsh one. But if you are at the start of your journey, just start it early, because you'll be so thankful. Your future self will really thank you.
I agree. And I think that one of the things that we can step outside and look at is, if strength training is one component of making a running journey a positive and an injury-free one, we can also then look at footwear and the foot as being another really important part of that experience. It's something that you obviously specialize in. So talk to me about the role of footwear. What should we be thinking about when it comes to choosing a shoe that's right for us and our runs?
So the biggest thing for me when it comes to footwear, and I'm an analogy gal, so I'll use another analogy, is think about when you go and get your eyes checked. Okay, you get your eyes checked, and if you do need glasses, you go, oh, I like that frame. Oh, my friend's got that frame. I really like that one. But what the optometrist does is checks your eyes and see how your eyes work, and then puts the lenses in to said frame. Think about it the same for running. your friend might get on really well with, I don't know, pluck a brand out of the sky, Nike, right? Your friend might get on really well with those and they say, oh, these shoes are great. If you just go and buy that shoe, you don't know that it works for you. You just know that it looks good on someone else and it works for them. So for me, that's where I'm like, always get a gait analysis. Because it could be that Nike's a good brand for you, but just not that shoe model. Could be something different. So always get it checked, because just because it works for your friend doesn't mean it's going to work for you. And this is, I say, you put on a pair of glasses that your friend's glasses, you're not exactly going to try and go around your day-to-day life wearing their glasses. So always, always have that idea that you're an individual and you need to make sure that you get someone to do a gait analysis, which is basically analyzing your running pattern first.
In a gait analysis, what are the things that people should be asking for or recognizing within themselves? Are there any key questions that people can take along to one of those sessions? And is there anywhere that you recommend people go for those things? Is it their local running shop generally?
Yeah, so the key things I would say is tell the person who's doing the analysis your length of time running. If you're a beginner, if it's brand new to you, because that can be a factor in, you know, the type of shoe that they have already thought of that's going to work for you. Maybe even previous injuries, if you know them, or areas where you're slightly sorer, things like that are really important. And then in terms of where to go, I always say go to an independent shop. Don't get me wrong, some of these brands do have great equipment. And if you know that a brand, once you've done that assessment initially, if you know a brand will always work for you, then of course go there. But for your first one, go somewhere where, you know, they stock 10, 11 brands, because the way to think about footwear is like a brand will be a certain shape for certain feet. So historically, New Balance, slightly a little bit wider, and they do whip fitting. So if you've got a slightly wider foot, that might work. Asics, slightly narrower in general, through the heel, through the middle of the foot. So if you've got a narrower foot, that might work. So it's one of those things where the different brands will actually just cater more so to different foot shapes. And then once they see how your foot movement and kind of knees and hips all align together, that's then when they'll start to advise on the type and the specific models of footwear.
Is there a way of knowing if the running shoe that you're currently wearing is good or not good for you? Like, I just asked because, like, I know that I personally, like, I invested in a pair of Hockers, no affiliation whatsoever, but like, I just plucked them out of the blue because I was like, oh, everyone's wearing Hockers at the moment, I'm going to get a pair. But I couldn't tell you whether they were good for me or not. So I wonder if people that are listening, you know, how do they know that the shoe that they've got is either good or bad for them? Like, is it something that we should be feeling, looking for?
So there is a lot of research actually done on this. And for the life of me, I've forgotten the guy's name who's done one of the main bits of research. But he basically found that comfort is one of the biggest indicators. So don't get me wrong, we can look at different areas and how the body moves. But if your discomfort level is high, very likely that shoe is incorrect for you. So maybe you recently bought a shoe, as you say, because you've seen everyone else wearing them, and you start to get weird little niggles, or you get weird numbness in the toes, or an injury that hasn't flared up ever before has just started to appear. Their little kind of red flags, just kind of like, hang on a minute, this might not be the right type of shoe. They're one of the biggest things I'd say. Look to get it changed. Or, you know, some brands are even great where you can go, this shoe's not right for me, and they can refund it. So definitely avail of that idea of, you know, if you're unsure, get yourself out on a run in it. If it doesn't feel comfortable, or if, as I say, a new injury's just appeared and you're not sure why, and mileage hasn't increased for any reason, that's a sign indeed.
I want to move on to talk about racing and running in races, which we know is becoming so hugely popular. Just initially kind of looking at, I guess, let's go from the 10K to the half marathon kind of pace, and maybe marathons as well, actually, sort of all of that included. What do you sort of recommend? I mean, this is so hard for you to do. And I know as a coach myself that, like, for people to go, give me a generalized idea of what some of you are doing. But I know that with running, like, is there a sort of a decent amount that you think someone should be aiming for if they're preparing for a race? What's the typical structure that you tend to kind of give your own clients that people might be able to, in a general capacity, apply to themselves?
So for me, it's, think about what that race distance is, right? Is it an achievable distance? So for example, anyone looking, let's just go top end, ultra marathon / marathon, minimum time frame, especially if it's your first, I would always try and get someone to work with me for a minimum of 24 weeks to 20 weeks. Purely because one, we're building that body up to do something it's never done before. And the biggest reason I do that time frame is life, right? Life literally gets in the way, be that social, be that work, be that just getting ill in this time of year, right? So by having a good 4 weeks that are in the bag that you might not actually use is okay. Because if something comes up, a holiday, a social, you know, wedding, for example, like you can go, okay, that week, I don't worry about pushing the miles too much because I know I've banked the work before. So having time on your side is for me the biggest thing when you've entered any race that you can kind of work to your advantage. Working down then sort of half marathon, again, I still try and say 16 to 12 weeks. 12 is probably the average, I'd say, but 16, again, gives you that buffer, gives you that time frame to kind of work around. And then as you go down to that 10K and 5K, you know, if it's your first one, you could still have 10, 12 weeks to build towards it. Same as a 10K. It just depends on how much you want to give to it in terms of, do you want to put in a real big stint of training, or is for you just the goal completion and building those miles week on week so that when you get to race day, you're feeling, you know, strong and comfortable to get yourself through that finish line. So I think, yeah, it comes from time, but also how, I hate to say the word well, but how strongly you want to tackle that race. Is it just completion for you, or have you a time goal in mind? Because if a time goal's in there, I'd always want to give just a little bit more time.
Yeah, it's always helpful when you have that buffer zone. Like I know that even within strength training as well, like you set yourself a time frame and then you just add a couple of weeks because life happens. It's so important to say that. Now look, speaking of ultras, you are running the Ultra 50-50. I need to know more about this. Tell me about what the race is, because I feel like ultras now are just becoming so popular. I said running's becoming popular, but it almost feels like that in its own subcategory is booming. So is this your first? Have you done one before? Tell me more about it.
So I've never done an ultra.
So exciting. Never.
So I've done a fair few marathons. So this year I'm going to be doing my 9th, 10th and 11th marathons. So wow. I feel like I've ticked that, scratched that itch as such. So yeah, ultra is, for those that don't know, is anything basically over the 26 mile distance. So you've got, which is 42K. So the main ones that people usually do is a 50K. And then there are sometimes kind of 75Ks in there, but it's usually 50 or 100, which I know is a massive jump. Now, it doesn't mean that these races are done on one day. They can be done over multiple days. And as you said, one thing that's amazing about ultras and kind of, say, leads on from that running community thing is time is nothing in ultra world. Unless, of course, you know, you're that top 5% that are racing these events. The whole idea behind ultras is that everyone can get involved. You know, you can walk these ultras. They don't all have to be run. You know, you can take your time with them. You can get very much more friends and family involved in it. And so, yeah, the one that I'm looking to do is in June. So it's a Race the Stones, which is, I'd say, one of, I've been actually involved with Race the Stones for a very long time when I used to work at Profeet in the running space. So I used to work with them and kind of help their runners and do analysis on their runners before they went and did the races. So it's a very exciting space, and say it's constantly growing.
So within ultras, I think because I follow a very niche community online, I see a lot of women that are doing them, but I know that you're working on a campaign at the moment that kind of is encouraging more of an equal split of women to men in ultra marathons. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it's this campaign called Ultra 50-50 with Threshold. And the idea is that we try and bring the disparity from kind of only 30% of women taking part in ultras to try and bring it to that 50-50. And it's great. I love that they've come up with this idea, because I think, you know, as much as, you know, we say, yes, we want to get women involved in sport, and yes, we want them doing all this running as well and participating and entering races, there are barriers there, which I think people don't really realize are there. So, you know, classic one, if you're on your period when you're running a race, are there things for you to use sanitary products when you get to a station? You know, it's not something that race organizers think about, but it's something that Threshold have thought about for their upcoming races and kind of making sure that those sanitary products are available. Making sure as well, things like when these races, as we said, 50, 100K, some of these are going to go on into the night. And, you know, I hold my hands up. I sometimes don't feel safe running at night, be that in a race or be that out day to day. So they're trying to, you know, give options to be able to run with chaperones at some of the races if you feel unsafe, and, you know, giving anyone trackers if they're concerned, so that they know that someone's tracking where they are. So they're really trying to, they're just some of the small things, but they're really trying to help give women that space to be like, by the way, we know these are issues you suffer with that men may not, but we still want you to enter and feel safe to do so.
That's really helpful. And I think that definitely as a space that continues to grow and continues to show interest in terms of people joining it, it is amazing to hear that they are trying to do more to particularly get women into that sport and to feel comfortable and safe. If people are interested in the campaign, we'll definitely put a link to that in the show notes. Speaking of inclusivity, London Marathon is April, am I right?
Correct, 21st.
And so it feels very close now. I mean, I can't believe we're almost in March. So yeah, crazy. But I think one of the things that people tend to focus on is they've got their training down, they're prepping for a race, they know when the race is, but really that kind of minute detail stuff that happens around that race. So the couple of days before, whether that be what to do with their training, carb loading, what are the bits of advice that you give closer to a race that you feel can be really helpful?
So carb loading is definitely one. Carb loading is a big one. So there, it's one of kind of the biggest amounts of research that loading up on those glycogen stores, those carbohydrates before an event, sort of 72 hours before, basically means that come race day, you have more stores to draw from. So you're talking about, you know, increasing your things like your pastas and changing your diet as such to be a bit more carb heavy than you would. So removing the fiber elements of your diet within those last 2 to 3 days, because you'll be resting, your body's able to store it. And so then when you come to race day, you've got that little bit of extra fuel to reach for when it comes to it. So that's a big one, definitely. And then the other things is don't change anything other than that. Do you know, I think the biggest thing I get when clients I work with, I like to call it maranoia. Right. And your brain your brain comes up with all these things. So not only is it paying attention to all the weather that's happening and you constantly can't stop checking the weather app, the next thing that then happens is after that, you're like, okay, well, no, that must be pain. That must be pain in my knee. I've injured my knee now. I'm not gonna be able to run on race day. That must be what's going on with me. And just all these little things that go on in your head before the race itself. So just trusting that your body's okay, your mind's playing all these tricks on you. And then I guess lastly for me is those, don't change your meal the night before. Any race, people are like, oh, what should I eat? Should I eat something different? What do you normally eat the night before you go for a long run in your training? What worked best for you the night before you did your long run in your training? Take note of that meal and maybe have it the night before the marathon or the big race itself, whether it's ultra, marathon, whichever. Because stick to what you know. The last thing you want to do is eat something completely different. And prime example, when I did Manchester Marathon last year, I literally brought up the pasta, the chicken, and the brand of pesto that I always have. And I brought that up with me and was like, cool, I'm going to cook this. I'm specifically got a room with a kitchen so I could cook my exact meal as I normally would. So that's me maybe being a little bit far on the end, but you know, like try and search for the same foods that you've always eaten.
Really, really good advice and really helpful. So guys, we just came off the record and Emma told me a little secret, and then we realized that the podcast comes out after the secret comes out. So we need to talk about it because it's a really important subject. So it's very close to Emma's heart and I'd love you guys to get involved. So Emma, take it away. Tell me all.
So basically the challenge is called 4-4-4-4 and I will be running 4 marathons in 4 weeks in the 4th month of the year, so April in 2024. And goal is to raise money for brain tumor research. And yeah, I'm excited. I'm very nervous at the same time, but I'm excited. So yeah, it's going to be, first one will be Brighton Marathon. Second one will be in Lake Garda for some lovely views. Third one [S2] Wow. [S1] Will be London. And then the 4th one, I'm actually going to create a route myself. I haven't checked it exactly, but I think I'm going to start in Richmond and then run the river all the way down to Towerbridge is the goal. So kind of if people want to join in, I'm going to put out stuff on social about kind of meet points. But if people want to join in for 5K, 10K, half, the full thing, more than welcome. So yeah, that's the challenge.
That's amazing. And I have no doubt that you're going to absolutely smash it. And I'm going to try and come down on that last one. That would be incredible to support you. Probably not for the whole distance ever, I'm going to be totally honest with you, but I'll be there for a cheeky 3K.
Love that. Every little helps.
That's really, really special. And we will definitely put the link to sponsor you in the show notes so that people can do that after hopefully listening and enjoying this podcast. Emma, thank you so much for everything you've spoken about today. It's been so insightful. And I really feel like it's an area of running that sometimes is maybe less talked about. It's probably the slightly, no offense on this one, but less sexy side of running to talk about your feet and your gait and stuff. But it's also really crucial to, like we've said, this whole conversation, your running journey being a long, sustainable and injury-free one. So I really appreciate your advice. If anyone wants to reach out to Emma for coaching or just to have a look at her Instagram and have a little nosy at all of the helpful content that she puts up, we'll put the link to that in the show notes. Emma, thank you so much again and good luck with all of the races this year.
Thank you. Been a pleasure.
So thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I'll be back on Friday for my Ask Alice. Again, if you have any questions for that, send us an email to the email that's in the show notes. If you are enjoying the podcast and you'd like to hear a little more from me, I am so excited to announce that I have just written my latest book, Give Me Strength, How I Turned My Back on Restriction, Nurtured the Body I Love, and How You Can Too. It comes out in July and is available for pre-order now. And it's the book I wish I had read when I was really struggling with body image and exercise addiction. And so if this sounds like something that might help you, you can find the link to get your copy in the show notes now. I'll be back next Wednesday for my next episode, and I look forward to speaking to you then.